The Paths to Parenthood podcast is designed to support those needing to use a donor to build their family. I'm Becky, also known as Defining Mum, and I'm also the founder of Paths to Parenthood. I'm the mum to three amazing girls, all thanks to egg donation.
And I'm Hayley King, the founder of All Things Donor Conception. I'm both a donor-conceived person and, in a twist of fate, the parent of donor-conceived children with my lovely wife.
Our aim is to open up conversations about this incredible route to parenthood, focusing on some of the nuances and complexities that it can bring.
Our hope is to provide different perspectives, information, reflection, and validation as we openly discuss different topics, share stories, and ask you for your input.
We hope you enjoy it.
Welcome back to the Paths to Parenthood podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today by Alexa, but also by my co-host Hayley. And we're going to be hearing all about Alexa's story today, which, to be completely transparent, Hayley and I only know the top lines of Alexa's story. So we're really looking forward to hearing more. And Alexa, I suppose, coming to you to maybe just start us off with your fertility journey, but just to tease everyone, there's going to be a few twists and turns along the way here, which we're really looking forward to hearing. So Alexa, over to you to share your story.
Oh, thanks so much, Becky. It's so great to be here, and it's wonderful to connect with people, you know, all over the world. Like, I think that it's, I just think it's so special to be able to connect with somebody who, you know, I'm in Canada, so we're not close, but it's so great to kind of find these similarities. So, well, my husband and I, we've been together for a really long time. We actually met as teenagers at summer music camp. So we've known one another for decades, and we always knew we wanted to have kids. So we both are only children. We wanted to have a big family. We knew that that was something, and it just wasn't happening for us. You know, we'd been together a long time. We really started trying to conceive before we were married. We just thought we'd get a jump start. My parents had struggled with infertility, so I knew that that maybe was, you know, something that maybe I would contend with as well. And so I thought I was being diligent, and, you know, I went to the doctor, I got blood tests. They said everything looked great. I was, you know, 26 years old. I thought, okay, this is going to be, I've checked that box. We're going to have a baby. It's going to be great. And so it sort of did the very traditional, you know, like we tried and then we didn't think about it and we tried. And then we thought about it and we started, you know, the ovulation predictor kits. And then we, you know, and sort of, this is kind of, and then we thought, okay, well, maybe we should go and see a doctor. So we went to a fertility doctor here in Ontario, which is where we are in Canada. And they checked everything out. They said, you know, I think your egg reserve is a little low, Alexa, but everything else looks great. So then we started with IUI. We moved into IVF with my own eggs. We were able to get some eggs from me, and we were able, they did sort of turn into embryos, but we did 5 transfers with my own eggs, and they all failed. They didn't, none of them implanted. And so it's, you know, it's a very short window. Of course, it took much longer. And I know, as I'm sure as both of you can attest, that the kind of those compounding failures, they really add up mentally. You know, it's very draining physically to do IVF and to inject yourself with these hormones. And so it was 6 years between starting, you know, with our treatments for infertility and then conceiving our son. So we have a son, he's a year old. So it does have a happy ending. But I think egg donation came into, you know, kind of our periphery around the 2-year mark. So we'd been trying, you know, with the help of doctors around 2 years, and we had done at that time 2 rounds of IVF, and both of them had been unsuccessful. And so they had both resulted in embryos. We had transferred them, they didn't work. And the doctor said, you know, I think that you should consider egg donation. And I thought, well, I don't know if you swear on this podcast, but I said an expletive. I was like, I don't want to do this. It's really not, I don't need this. You know, this doctor is wrong. I think that many people will probably feel the same way.
And so, Alexa, how old were you at that time? Oh, just so I was, you said you were 26.
Yeah, so I was 26 when I first got tested, but actually many years had passed. So I went to the doctor first at 31. So then we sort of started, trying for a year, and then we started doing fertility treatments at, you know, 33, 34, into IVF at 35. Like, so it was just sort of this really long kind of trajectory, and it makes it sound like we struggled with infertility, but it wasn't really in our conscious, like we weren't really consciously trying till I was about 34. So, or 30, 32 or 33. So it's, you know, it was kind of a long time of just being really not careful. and then we kind of moved into the more formal treatments. And so, you know, we had this first doctor, and I don't know, I'm not sure about you guys, but we actually went through three different clinics. We had several different doctors. It was really hard to find the right fit for us. So this first doctor that mentioned egg donation, I mean, I think she had a really thankless task. Honestly, it's very hard to be the first person who brings it up. So, yeah. You know, thinking back, she was a great doctor. I think that the timing is very tricky to bring up something like that. You know, so she brought it up sort of, you know, maybe right after like our IVF had not been successful. And it was just a tough time to hear. You know, it was a very short conversation. There wasn't a lot of room for questions. And so quite a bit of time passed, actually. And we had then moved to another fertility clinic. So we were at the fertility clinic that we ended up staying at that helped us conceive our son. And so egg donation just sort of naturally became more and more to the forefront. You know, we kept trying with my eggs. It was kind of the same story. So we would retrieve 4 or 5 eggs. They do sort of well, they'd fertilize, but then they'd kind of dwindle, and maybe we'd be lucky and get one embryo. Maybe we wouldn't get any embryos, you know, so it was just kind of this, and it was really starting to look familiar, right? And so egg donation just started to feel,
You see the hope a bit more, yeah. Don't you? I think it's very similar to my own situation, mm-hmm. where there was always something. I had some follicles, and in some ways I kind of wanted them to close the door and say, no, it's not going to work this way. Here's how you do it. It was hard to make that decision to move from my eggs to egg donation, but I think I became more open to it every time I had a failure with my own eggs, because I think you start to think, actually, maybe this isn't going to work. And then you have to start looking at other options, don't you?
You know, it's so interesting to hear you say that, because that's so similar to me as well. Like it, I wanted someone to say, look, there's no chance, you have to move on, so that I didn't have to be the one to make the decision. And, you know, our doctor is wonderful. She's a doctor here in Canada. And she said, you know, I'm never going to tell you to stop trying with your own eggs. That's a decision you have to make yourself. And I thought, oh, why can't it just be? Why can't it just be, you know, like, why can't it be like really cut and dried? So I think it's so interesting to hear you say that. It is just that slow progression of it flipping from something that you just, you know, didn't consider and didn't want to do, or for me, didn't want to do, to something that actually started to feel like appealing and started to actually feel hopeful, right? Like, so I think for me, there are about 4 main points to, like, in my journey of the kind of 6 or 7 years. And the first one happened really early, and I was seeing an acupuncturist to go for. You know, I don't know what you guys are like, but I did this thing. You know, it's like I started cutting things out of my diet. I started being really obsessive about the kind of exercise that I was doing and the things that I was eating. I tried the herbs, I tried the acupuncture, I tried it all. And it was just this cycle of self-punishment. Like, I just kept, you know, and these things that I was adding was really actually making my life much worse, when fundamentally it was something wrong that I couldn't change about myself. You know, it's like I wear glasses, but I don't beat myself up about needing glasses to see, right? I think of it, glasses, as help. And so my ovaries didn't work, but actually the rest of my body was really healthy, but it took a very long time to come to that, like come to that conclusion. And so I had been seeing this acupuncturist, and I had shared with her, you know, I don't know, we'd had these 2 failures with the IVF, and I said, I think the doctor suggested egg donation. What do you think? And she said, I think that you might have to make a decision in the future, and I think it's going to come down to whether you want to be related to your baby or whether you want to be pregnant. And her office was on the 6th, and she said, I think you should think about this. Her office was on the 6th floor of a building, and by the time I got to the ground floor, I knew I wanted to be pregnant. It wasn't a thing that I wavered on. It was more important to me to have the experience of pregnancy than it was to be genetically related. And so even though we did many more rounds of IVF with my own eggs after that, it was a conversation that I remembered. And I never wavered on. I thought, yep, I want this experience. You know, that to me feels, so I thought, if at all possible, that's the road I want to go down. And then the second point, and this is probably almost 2 years later, I think, than this conversation I'd had, was that we were really looking into egg donation seriously. We were starting to kind of look at the kind of egg donation we wanted to do. And I shared with my parents, my mom and my dad, that we were considering doing egg donation. And, you know, it was a phone conversation with my mother. And she said, well, honey, are you sitting down? I have something to tell you. To conceive you, your father and I used a sperm donor. And so I found this out at 36 years of age.
Wow.
I always tell people that it was shocking, but not surprising.
Yeah.
So growing up, there was no mention of me being donor conceived. But, you know, from the time that I was, you know, I was so young, I don't even remember when I started asking, but I would pepper my parents with questions. I would say, am I adopted? Like I just had this feeling, like I kept asking them, and they would always say the same thing. They'd say, nope. You know, and I, nope, you're our daughter. You were, we used IUI to get pregnant, but that was kind of the extent of the conversation, but I couldn't let it drop. And so I thought I was adopted for a while. I thought maybe my parents used a surrogate. I didn't believe, you know, my mom had just a few pictures of herself being pregnant. Like she had two or three. And I thought, oh, that's not enough pictures. I wonder if she stuffed a pillow under her shirt. Like kids are really intuitive.
I was going to say inquisitive as well.
Inquisitive is such a great word. Yeah.
Just to say as well, as you were talking there, Alexa, it's cool. I don't know if you've heard of the phrase, the thought unknown. A lady called Dani Shapiro has written a book called Inheritance, and she is a donor conceived person. Huh. It's one of the first memoirs that I've ever read. And she describes this thought unknown. And it kind of describes the kind of that feeling that you've just mentioned, where you have kind of some sixth sense or kind of spidey senses, as we sort of call it in the UK, and question it. And I had exactly the same thing, funny enough, saying that with my parents. Obviously, I'm donor conceived too. But as you were just saying, I wondered if you'd ever come. As you were talking, I was like, that's the thought, you know, the thought unknown.
I've never heard of this. And I'm really going to check out this book. You'll remind me of the name of the book after we're done, because this is amazing. I've actually never heard of that. And that's such a perfect phrase to, you know, and it's funny. I thought of all these things as a kid, but I actually never thought about donor conception. I didn't know about it. So it really was a thought. It really was a thought unknown. And so I thought about it off and on until my parents shared with me that I was donor conceived. Yeah. And then, so it was a huge shock to our relationship, but you know, my parents and I are very close. I'm an only child, and so it was a lot of like tough conversations initially, but very quickly we kind of moved into this sort of new understanding. And it's very uncomfortable for them to talk about, and we can talk more about that later. But for me, what it did at that point was it removed so many doubts that I had about using donor conception to get pregnant. I thought, well, this is great. I share so many things with my father. You know, we have the same sense of humor. We really see the world in a very similar way. We're very close. You know, if he can do it, I can do it too. So what it ended up doing for me, learning ultimately, you know, it is an adjustment, and it is a shock, and we will talk more about that.
Yeah.
But what it ended up doing was actually really removing a barrier, a mental barrier, and actually kind of getting me excited about donor conception, because I thought, this is the best of both worlds. I'm going to have this experience to relate to my future child. And, you know, my parents and I we have a close relationship, and I did take a lot, and I learned a lot from my father. So I think that helped me move forward. And then, the third experience, so this is much later. So we were all in on donor eggs. We'd done our last IVF. We were ready to go, but we were just kind of feeling unsure about like when to start. You know, I think it's hard when you're in a partnership. My husband and I, we were very aligned on using donor eggs, but the timing was a bit tricky. I think that it was hard for him to, you know, it's really hard as a partner, I think, to kind of like grieve the loss of genetics in a way that's different than me grieving the loss of my genetics. So I was ready to move forward. My husband still had some reservations, and we have an organization here in Canada called Donor Conception Canada, and they're a nonprofit organization. And they have meetings for all kinds of, they have meetings for donor conceived people. They have meetings for intended parents, single parents, same-sex couples, you know, it's just every kind of, you know, like situation that you can imagine. So we went to this meeting in person, and we connected with all these other people. And I had been worried at this time that I didn't have everything figured out. I was like, how am I going to do this? Like, how am I going to share this? I don't have all the steps figured out. And then I went to this meeting, and these parents, this is so great. This is like the secret of parenthood, is that nobody knows anything. Everybody's figuring things out on the fly.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, everybody had a very different story about how they came to donor conception, how they were parenting their donor conceived children. And I thought, oh, this is great. Like, this makes me feel good. I don't have to have every step figured out. We can pull the plug and start, and we figure it out as we go. So I think that was the kind of the final barrier. And then the fourth thing was, we were already in the process. We had picked our donor. We were finalizing our legal agreement. And part of the process here in Canada is that you have to have a mandatory counseling session with some kind of therapist about, you know, the implications of donor conception. And so as we were speaking to the donor, she shared with me the eyesight thing. She said, "I noticed that you wear glasses. How do you feel about not having 20/20 vision?" And I thought, well, I feel fine about it. I love glasses. They're kind of neat. And she said, "I wonder if there's a way to think about it as, you know, a part of your body doesn't work perfectly, but the rest of your body functions well and you're healthy. And so what if you think about it as having help, you know, to conceive, but you know, you are doing the work." And I was like, oh, that's, it was so transformational for me. And I thought that's a really great image to remove a lot of that kind of self-blame that you have of feeling. I don't know if you guys struggled with this, but I think I felt very broken. I felt so much shame and blame. You know, my husband really wanted to have kids and I was preventing us from starting this family. And it just like my fault. And so, you know, I think that the glasses analogy just really helped me to like just kind of remove that blame and just
it's reframing.
Reframing. Yeah.
Just reframe. Yeah. And I completely resonate with that. There's a lot of self-blame, I think, and it can be really hard to move past that. But I think for me, a little bit, like you just said, was focusing on what I could do, not what I couldn't do, and what I could do in terms of being able to be pregnant and grow this child, bring them into the world, and then nurture ever since. But I love how you've split that into four different points of almost,
and
like
it fits very neatly moments. But I'm telling you, it was a long time, you know, it's like a long time between, like,
we need to write these down, don't we? We need we'll write them down,
definitely,
with some advice. So
I wanted to touch on something you said there, and with that twist in your story where you found out that you were donor conceived yourself. And actually, Hayley, it'd be good to get your comment on this, because it very much reminded me of how you made that decision to go forward and not to use your genetics with your wife, and the fact that you knew the relationship you had with your dad, regardless of genetics. And I think that is a real comfort for people, I think, who are listening as well, as it was for you in terms of making that decision. And have you, Alexa, had conversations with your dad around it? How has that progressed since you were told at that point in time?
Yeah, you know, it has progressed. It's now been 4 years since I found out. And so, you know, I actually haven't had that many conversations with my dad about it. And interestingly enough, it was my mother that shared the information with me. So it's almost as if, like, my dad was kind of this sort of like unwilling participant, like, in sharing the story. But we have talked a couple of times since then. And you know, it's so different now. I mean, largely thanks to the work that you are doing. And, you know, I found your account when we were thinking about donor eggs. And I think just that kind of transparency really helped us to kind of think about how I would want to do it. And so, but, you know, in sharing with my parents, like, you know, I'm 40 years old, so it was a long time ago that they were doing it. And it was so different. It was not talked about. There was, again, a lot of shame around not being able to conceive. And so it was almost done in secret. My parents had this doctor that they went to, and, you know, when it did work, my mom was pregnant, the doctor actually said to them, "Well, now it's done. You're going to have a baby and you never have to talk about it again.
Go away and forget about it."
So really, I mean, they were following the doctor's advice, you know, and also there just was not the same kind of framework for support and understanding and like groups and talking about this kind of thing. So it did kind of become this secret that, you know, as time goes on and, you know, as your kids start asking questions, or as I was asking questions, I don't think that they were really prepared to answer. But I think that the important takeaway for people listening, whether you're donor conceived or whether you have a donor conceived child, is that it's never too late. You know, I have a good relationship with both of my parents. This has changed our relationship, but in a positive way, you know, and we are able to talk about more open things, and we are able to, and in the way that I talk about Robin and how I say, "Oh, Robin, you know, he has his donor's eyes. Oh, I wonder if our donor does this like Robin, you know, itches his nose. Does our donor do this?" And it kind of allows that space for my parents and my dad to kind of think about, like, "Oh, well, you know, not of me, but like with me," you know? So
yeah,
I think it's never too late to have that conversation. I think that it's always, there are always things that you can take away, and, you know, like a curiosity and an openness can really, can really change over time from something that's secretive to, you know, I think there's a difference between privacy and secrecy. And so that's something that is really hard to work out. And I think with no tools, I think my parents did the best that they could. And yeah. they did a good job. I just think that they didn't have the kind of resources that we have now, right? Yeah.
And it's good that they actually did. I know the circumstances. I mean, telling you that information when you're going through treatment itself has got its own complexities in that disclosure process, but it did come from them. I think we hear lots of people in our community that get told either in very unpleasant circumstances through family disputes or arguments or through DNA testing. But like you say, you're never too late to have those conversations with your children if you haven't already. I think that, you know, we know now best practice and research suggests we should be having those conversations really early, which obviously we're all trying to do and advocate for.
Yeah.
But there are parents out there, you know, even parents that had children, you know, way after our parents had us that won't have told. And it's still, you still have time and there is support out there.
You always have time. Yeah.
To have those conversations. Because I just know from speaking with probably hundreds of donor conceived people over several years, it's better, even though it might be difficult news to deliver, it's always better to come from the parents and not from an outside source or from conflict and things like that. So it's nice to hear and how it's strengthened actually
your bond
it really with has. Your parents. And I that massively resonates with me as well, because it's been 10, nearly 11 years since I found out. And it has, it's changed in better ways. I think it's opened up conversations for us and kind of.
That's so interesting. So you found out as an adult as well then?
Yes. Yeah. I found out, in my early 30s. But again, similarly to you, I remember as a child asking loads of questions I had bright white hair as a child. My dad's, you know, ginger. My mum used to say things, your dad was blonde as a kid, and he wasn't. He's been always been ginger. He's always been a redhead. And that's kind of stuck with me, those kind of family narratives. Yep. And I think those things that it's kind of, when you reflect back, you're like, actually, I was really shocked and surprised to learn the situation and that I was donor conceived, but actually I'm not that shocked when I look at
It kind of adds up, right?
Yes.
Or it makes sense. It kind
makes
of
sense,
the pieces sort of fall into place.
Of course.
You know, similar to that. So my father has blue eyes, my mother has green eyes, and I have brown eyes. And I remember, I'm old enough to not grow up without the internet, but it was around when I was a teenager. And I remember Googling genetics, and I was thinking, wait a second.
How have I got?
It's a 0%. That's the only one that has a 0% chance. How does this math work out? So it is so interesting. And I think like in that vein of, you know, I actually do think that I was fortunate to find out from my parents. You can have something really important stolen from you if you find out in a way that is if you find out through a dispute or through a genetic test. Like I think that there is, but I think, you know, in sharing with people who haven't shared yet, like I think that it is really important to, you know, we do know that best practice is to share early, but I do think that it's okay to take the time that you need to work out your concerns. Because the thing is, you know, it's going to be your child is going to have their own relationship to donor conception, and you're going to have your relationship. So I think that it's really important in, you know, maybe just the initial stages of thinking about donor conception or going through with it for pregnancy, or even when your children are little, to work out what's yours. What are your discomforts? What gives you that reaction, right?
Yeah.
And it's okay to take the time to work on that. You will 100%. Be better serving your child. And so if it takes a couple years, or if you're listening to this and your child is, you know, 10 or 12 or a teenager, it's okay. My parents didn't share the news perfectly, but we got a perfect result. You know, it's our relationship. It's the relationship we're supposed to have. And I think that, you know, my parents are wonderful people, but they're pretty traditional. They don't like follow a lot of online things. I mean, my father doesn't even use the internet. He does not have a cell phone. He just refuses to do technology. But, you know, they, in their own way, we found our language to talk about it. We found these things. And I think that you don't actually have to have the tools. You just can lead with love. I know that sounds a little bit, you know, like, I think you have the tools, you should use them. But I think that it's okay. It's you're going to figure it out how to talk to your own child. And it'll be different for everybody.
Yeah. You know? It's a process. And we always say it's a process, isn't it? Like, definitely. And that's what we try to help parents with. I know, Becky,
absolutely.
We talk all the time, don't we, about it. And it means, you're very right, Alexa, in the sense that it does it does look differently for different mm-hmm. people in different mm-hmm. families, and it's trying to find what you're comfortable and how you're going to sort yeah. of translate that.
So, yeah. yeah, and I think the relationship will get you there as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's yeah. got a different relationship. And I think just as you were talking there, Alexa, I just wanted to kind of maybe ask, what was it from your own experience of finding out you were donor conceived mm-hmm. that's shaped your parenting now with your little boy? Yeah. So yeah. what have you learned from that that you now want to do differently maybe, or how it's shaped how you feel about parenting a donor mm-hmm. conceived child?
Yeah, so I think of it actually as an advantage, like going in sort of knowing this, and it gave me the opportunity to think about, like, between finding out and then actually, you know, getting pregnant with Robin, it gave me the time to think about how I wanted to do things. And it's a real luxury. And I think, you know, I also think that, like, just the sort of legacy of parenting is that we always want to evolve and improve upon our parents. Like, I have never met a single person who's like, I'm going to do things exactly like my parents. I'm not going to change a thing, you know. So this is the thing that we do with our children, and this is the thing that our children will do with us, right? Everyone is going to be improving on something that they felt they can do better. And then, of course, that's also the thing about parenting, is that turns out you can't do it better, and your children are going to try to improve on that. So for me, you know, I knew in the way that I found it, I thought, okay, you know, I think we're going to do things differently. And, you know, we're very fortunate here in Canada to have, so it's in Canada, it's illegal to be paid for egg or sperm donation. That doesn't mean you don't pay a lot of money. We did pay a ton of money, but people sort of volunteer to donate their eggs or their sperm. And it's a little bit complicated. You, if you don't know anybody, like, we didn't know. So we ended up using a donor that we didn't know, but we have an open really, or a known donation relationship with her. And so I knew that I wanted to pick, when we didn't have any friends, you know, that were young enough to donate. And so when we found our donor, we found her through an organization here, and she was, I knew I wanted someone local. So I knew that I wanted someone who lived in the same province as us. I knew that, I wanted her to do her donation at our clinic, so that I knew that I wanted her to be properly taken care of. I didn't want, you know, I had heard some practices of people, you know, in anywhere, really, honestly, could be anywhere in the world, but, you know, just like that, are they're just given a lot of drugs, they're not monitored. So I knew that I wanted her to be taken care of as best as she could. I knew that I wanted her to have her own children. I wanted her to have her own family. I didn't want to be taking an opportunity away from her. That's just how I feel. I think everybody has different yeah. things that they are. And then I knew that I wanted the possibility of a relationship. So I knew that I wanted someone who was interested in getting to know us and getting to know our future child. So with those things in mind, like, those were kind of the hallmarks of things that I really wanted and needed. And then everything else was kind of was kind of secondary. You know, we I'm very privileged in our relationship. My husband is Chinese, and so I knew going in that my child was not going to look exactly like me. So the physical attributes of the donor were not as important to me, because I knew that it would be a wonderful mixture of the two of us and two different races and two different. But also, you know, growing up, I felt like I didn't look like either of my parents. So that was also a thing that wasn't as important to me. But I think that if that is something that people are looking at, if it's really important that, you know, they share your eye color or your hair color or your nose or something. So for some people, if they have a physical attribute that's really important to them, I think it's okay to acknowledge that that's important. I think sometimes in infertility and, you know, continuing into donor conception, we have this feeling of like, oh, but I must be grateful. I can't, it's a little bit of a shame thing. Like, oh, I can't ask for these things. And I think if it's important to you, that's okay. You know, it's okay to acknowledge that these things are important. And it may or may not happen to be that you get this, but, you know, so it's like, I think like thinking, spending some time thinking about what's important to you and, you know, you can talk to other people about it, but I think it's okay if these things are just for you. You know, I think that whatever you feel is important, I think that's important, you know? So for me, I had these kind of sort of three or four things that were really important. And, you know, we were so fortunate with our egg donation that it moved very quickly. So from the time of contacting the organization to find us an egg donor, to positive pregnancy test was less than 6 months, which is, you know, it's very short. And so I actually think of our infertility in two parts. I think of it as with my own eggs, and it was really bumpy and really hard and, you know, filled with lots of sadness. And, you know, the egg donation process, actually, I think of now, you know, of course, this is after having a baby, but I think of it as being very smooth and straightforward. You know, the donor, it was the third picture I looked at and I thought, this is it, you know? She wrote very beautifully about, you know, her own experience as she was adopted. And so she felt that genetics, you know, were not the only thing to parenting. She put some pictures of her sons in there and, you know, she wrote about her philosophy and, you know, her job and what she did. And it was just instant. I just thought, this is it. And I'm a person who's very indecisive. I spend a lot of time in my daily life, like whiffling and waffling on things. But this was, again, it was like that decision in the elevator. I didn't waver. I called my husband and he was working in the other room. I said, Kevin, get in here. I think this is our donor. And so by the end of the day, you know, we'd contacted them. We would put down this deposit and this was it. And it moved very quickly from there. And, you know, fortunately she was able to do her donation. She wanted to do it right away. She was on summer break with her children. And so she's like, I want to do this before my sons go back to school. And so it just ended up, you know, working out. And you know, she was interested in getting to know and having, yeah. You know, she said she was interested. I mean, we haven't actually met yet and we'll get to that in a minute. Yeah. We had a little bit of a bump in our journey. We're hoping to meet up soon. So that was great. So, you know, it just kind of all aligned and you know, we were very fortunate. She did this retrieval. She made more eggs than I had ever retrieved and, you know, they turned into embryos and our very first transfer, with her egg and my husband's sperm is that's our son. So it worked and it worked Amazing. Out and it was a really surreal experience. I don't know, Becky, if you kind of had this, but after, I actually didn't have, I didn't get pregnant. I didn't have any positive pregnancy tests. So I just sort of had like failed. And then when I looked at the pregnancy test, cause I had said to my husband, we had, oh my goodness, after this transfer that resulted in our son, Robin, we had like one of the saddest conversations. I said, oh, Kevin, I know this didn't work and we have to think about what we're going to do. And I don't think I'm ever going to be able to conceive. And the next morning I took a pregnancy test and there was the line. So, and I just kept staring at it and I was like, no, this,
you don't believe it.
I don't think this is just real. Yeah. So, you know, we have a box. I took a million pregnancy tests and I still have them all.
I did as well, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Kept going back to check in the bin. Yeah. Like, yes, it's
right.
still.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it's still positive, right? So it is. And you know, one of the things that I, very early on, I really grieved the loss of was being able to surprise Kevin with a test. I had this thing that I just wanted to do it. And I knew then as we moved into IVF, I was like, oh man, you know, he's going to know when we can see, like, it's not going to. And then of course, as we got further and further, I thought, oh my gosh, it's not even going to happen. I'm not going to be able to do this. And in the end, I was able to surprise him. We'd had this sad, sad conversation. And the next morning I said, oh my gosh, look at this. So we did get it. We did get that wish after all, you know? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Amazing. And so how old is your son now?
So
how
he's a year old. Mm-hmm. And so it was, you know, I was very fortunate. We had this first transfer. And it worked. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. And so I spent the whole first trimester just on pins and needles waiting for something to go wrong. And I mean, just, you know, so understandable, that anxiety. And as the pregnancy progressed, I kept waiting for, you know, it sort of shifted from something bad
to
happen.
Yourself.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Right. And then, but then it shifted into like, okay, but what problems am I going to have now? Because I'd had such trouble conceiving. So I was like, okay, am I going to have postpartum anxiety and depression? Am I going to have trouble breastfeeding? What is, like, I just anticipated all of these things going wrong. And, you know, in the end, am I going to have a really difficult birth? And in the end, my birth went fairly straightforward. I was able to breastfeed, no problems. And I thought, oh my gosh, like, this is it. This is so amazing. And then at 2 months of age, our son was diagnosed with a very rare liver disease called biliary atresia. And he ended up needing a liver transplant when he was 4 months old. So we went in. So, and it, biliary atresia, it's not that common, but it doesn't present in utero. It doesn't show up. So it's like a malformation in the bile ducts. And so the bile collects and it destroys the liver. So these kids, they end up needing this liver transplant. Sometimes they can go earlier. Like, our son had this major surgery at 2 months old to try to stave off the liver, like, deterioration, but it didn't end up working. It has a very high failure rate. It's called the Kasai. And so we moved immediately. We live in Ottawa. And then we had to be flown in a helicopter to the big hospital in Toronto to pursue this liver transplant. And so we spent from September 10th until January 2nd in the hospital with our, wow, with our son. So from 2 months to almost 6 months old.
Yeah.
And it was just not what we just weren't prepared. Like, it was just, it was not, it was so devastating. And, you know, it's such a, He is doing very well now. Yeah. And, you know, in a very cosmic turn of events, I actually ended up being a match to donate my liver, even though I'm not genetically related.
Wow.
So
I know.
On November 7th, I went in, my husband said goodbye. Oh. His wife and his son, they have two hospitals side by side in Toronto.
Yeah.
A hospital for sick children and the general hospital. I went into the general hospital at 6 a.m. They took my liver out, wheeled it in a tunnel, put it into our son. I mean, it's a very long, very, very long surgery. For me, it was much shorter. It was about a 6-hour surgery. And then for our son, it was close to 10 hours. He's only 4 months old at this point. Yeah. You know, he's in intensive care. And then so it's like I do share a genetic connection with
I was going to say that this is
just not what anyone anticipated.
No, exactly, not that kind of. So what are the chances? I mean, do they know, what are the chances of that match happening? Like, are we talking like crazy numbers or?
No, I think it's not as rare as it seems. I think to me,
it's pretty incredible.
I think they said about 50% of the time it ends up being a parent and then 50% of the time it ends up being, you know, not related. So I think there was a good chance. We actually initially thought, you know, it's funny, but actually Robin being donor conceived ended up having so many benefits when Robin got sick because we were able to share all this genetic information.
Yeah.
That we had. So our donor had done a genetic screening. She'd been screened for, you know, 500 diseases. We were able to share this. And then, you know, it's funny enough, this disease is not genetic.
I was going to say,
it's just horrible luck. It's just what ended up having. Yeah.
Being able to have that screening test and provide it. Because we do hear, sadly, some situations. And it's one of those things you don't always think about, I think, when you're going down the route of donor conception. Mm-hmm. Many banks, obviously, and sperm and egg banks do these extensive screening testing now, but they maybe didn't always.
Yeah.
But still, like you say, even being able to have that or actually being able to maybe potentially reach out to the donor and ask some questions as well, I can imagine was helpful. But what an incredible, like just all of that, isn't it? Like not only the kind of infertility, the journey that you've been on and the kind of obviously having your son and the medical issues and, but wow, it's, But look, we've just for some context, we did have a little glimpse of him on screen.
He just keeps it on his way in,
He looks amazing. But how is he now?
So he's doing really well now. You know, we were very fortunate that the liver took almost immediately and it was a very long recovery for Robin. But, you know, he's back. He's caught up to all of his milestones. He had to spend a lot of time on his back. So we avoided tummy time. And so we had to do a bit of catch up. But he's just doing so well. And it's really wonderful to see him. Oh. He was not quite walking, but he's getting really close and he's chatting away, he's sort of babbling. And so it's very nice to, you know, we have sort of a lifetime of medical management, but the outcomes are quite good. And, you know, going back to what I was saying about being able to share. So we had this information and our donor actually does have a condition that we were able to share with the team. And they ended up changing a medication that if they had given him the normal medication could have caused some complications. But because they knew and because we knew this, that they were able to prescribe a different medication right away. So it ended up actually having a lot of positives and we were able to share this information. And then we were also able to present all this genetic information. So we were able to move really quickly and Robin didn't have to do quite as many tests to rule out a genetic component because we had already had a lot of kind of raw information that we wouldn't have if my husband and I had conceived on our own. So
So I imagine with you being donor conceived that you are kind of missing some of that medical genetic history as well.
Yeah.
And I was curious as to whether you have gone down a route to try and find out who your parents' donor was. That's another kind of strand to this story. I think we could talk for hours, couldn't we, about so many different elements.
So, you know, I don't have any information. It's funny, like now we were able to present this binder of information. We sort of know quite a bit and, you know, in sort of reaching out to our donor. So we got a little delayed in reaching out. We you know, initially contacted her and said, hey, we had this baby, like, congratulations. Like, I mean, not congratulations. We had this baby. Congratulations to us. But we weren't able to get together with her and we're hoping that we'll be able to kind of, you know, make that contact really soon. We have to be quite careful with Robin because he is immunosuppressed right now. Well, he will be for the rest of his life, but we have to just, in that first year post-transplant, we just have to really kind of not do a lot of stuff. So we're hoping to kind of make that contact soon. And, but for me and for my parents, you know, my parents were told he's a medical student. They didn't have a picture. They didn't have, you know, this is also, they're kind of remembering like back. And, I was actually, I don't have any info. I was like, how do I do this? Like, do I do a DNA test and just find out if I have like 500 siblings? I'm not sure. And so it is something that I have thought about. And, you know, it ultimately isn't really that important to me right now. I have a great relationship with my dad. I don't feel the need to find out, maybe in terms of like medical stuff, but I have thought about, you know, what it would be like in relation, like, should I do it so that I kind of know, or, you know, like in relation to like my relationship with Robin, my son, is this a thing that we want to do together? So yeah, they just got told, like, they didn't get a photo. They didn't get any info. Mm-hmm. So it's so different, right? Than it is now.
Yeah.
When you think about how much information we had going in versus how much information my parents had. So yeah, it's really different. Yeah.
You've had a lot on your plate as well.
Then
throw the bit of DNA tested into the mix.
But I do think about it. I definitely do think about it. I don't know, Haley, like, I don't know, I don't know what your relationship is to that and how much you know or what you're finding out.
It's really funny. My parents were told the same: medical student, no info, no history, no photo. And it did turn out, I found out, like I say, 10 years ago, but it took several years for me to actually think, I'd quite like to know. Partly DNA testing wasn't really a thing back then. I mean, it was, but it was crazy expensive. And
yes,
the kits weren't really as common as they are now.
Yeah.
But it was actually the birth of our two children. When they were about two and a half, I just became quite curious, I think. Yeah. And I think around the time that we were starting to think about how we were going to talk to them about their story and starting to kind of have those discussions as a couple.
Yeah.
And yeah, just got a bit curious and just decided then to DNA test. And it turns out he was actually a medical student. He's actually a doctor.
There you go.
And I've had, yeah, exactly. So there
was
some
element. Do we have the same dad?
You never know what year we were.
Yeah.
Honestly, nothing surprises me, Alexa, anymore. So we'll see. And we both talk quite fast. So maybe there is something.
I don't know. Could be.
But he
back to you.
Yeah, he's a lovely guy, and I've been very fortunate.
Oh,
actually.
That's so nice. You were able to meet him. Wow.
Yeah, I've been able to meet him, and I've also I've just had another sibling pop up on the DNA site. So there's five of us now. So yeah, and I was raised an only child, so it's been
an only child as well. Okay. There you go. Yeah.
So but yeah, I mean, it's all, I think it's so interesting, like, listening to different people's stories, and like you say, it's you may never decide to test, and I think there's lots of people out there that don't, and then there's other people that really are interested and want to do it kind of as soon as possible, and there's such a range of feelings about it, and I think it's just interesting to hear where you're kind of at with it. But
and isn't it wonderful that we kind of have that option, right? To, like, we have that option to know more if we want to know more. And I think that I think it's like any opportunity that you have, to think of it as like an invitation rather than an obligation. I think, again, trying to reframe that, whether you're finding out yourself or whether you're, you know, talking to your children, I think that if you think of it like as a curiosity rather than some kind of formula that you have to follow, I think that it just opens it up, you know, into, and also just knowing that you can always change course. I mean, we make mistakes as parents all the time, and this is what it is, right? It's just changing course and trying to repair what we've done and moving forward. Like, I think that one of the images that was really helpful for me that I came up with when I was thinking of the relationship between the donor and myself was of a painting. And so I think of it as my donor providing the materials, the canvas, the paintbrushes, the paints, everything that you need. You can't paint a painting without that material, but I put the painting together, and only I could paint that particular painting. In a different uterus, in a different environment, it would be a totally different painting. So I think that it's like, I think it's taking the opportunity to acknowledge this really important, we would not be here without her. She, you know, she enjoys a very privileged position in our family, and we thank her every day, but, you know, it's me that's doing the work. It doesn't, you know, I have, one of the things that I think actually, you know, thanks to the conversations that I have heard and, you know, that you have been having, is that I didn't struggle with connection. And I think, you know, it's maybe knowing that I was donor conceived, but I never worried about, connecting with my baby. He's my baby. I mean, of course, now we do have this genetic connection. And I think that in a weird way, you know, donating my liver really like drove home that I was doing everything I could to keep him alive. So I don't wish that for anybody else. Don't go down that road. We hope that that's, you know, unique, but yeah, I didn't worry about it. And, you know, he's young. So obviously we have, you know, complex conversations in our future. And, but, you know, they'll just kind of evolve how they do, right? You know, and it's like, I think it's also, for me, it's important to, you know, kind of foster this relationship with our donor early, because my relationship with her is not going to be Robin's relationship with her. You know, it's going to be, it's like, I see it as my responsibility to open the doors and the windows, and whichever one Robin wants to walk through, that's up to him, you know? So I think that that's kind of how I see it now. And obviously we'll check in a few years and I'm sure things will have totally changed. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really interesting watching you talk, because I know from when you first started telling your story and you said, like, when somebody mentioned egg donation, you were like, absolutely no.
Yeah, hard no.
No way,
yeah.
Whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And now you're so comfortable with it, mm-hmm. because you have that reassurance from your own story as well. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. what were those initial fears when you were like, absolutely not? This is obviously before you knew you were donor conceived. Just yeah. to kind of bring to life, what were those feelings for you then?
Yeah. Well, I think there's definitely a lot of that, like, defensiveness, you know, like, no, there's nothing wrong with me. This is fine. You know, you're just bad at medicine, you know, like, it's like that. It's not wanting to accept maybe that there is something denial. Beyond my control. Denial. Yeah. And then I think moving into that whole, how we went, you know, I really went down this just absolutely punishing road of trying to change myself. You know, I like thinking that I could improve this egg quality. And, you know, sometimes, yes, sometimes you do have a good outcome and you make a small change and that's what you needed. But a lot of the times it's something deeply, you know, I don't know exactly. I don't know what it is. I mean, we did sort of, I do think one of the things that really helped me come around was that I was able to try with my own genetics. And so for me, that was a closure. You know, we tried. Yeah. So many times we tried so many things. We did immune treatments. You know, I was able to kind of close that door and say, I did everything I could, you know? And so, but I think just like initially, yeah, it was just that feeling of, it's that feeling of failure. It's that feeling of being broken. It's that feeling of, you know, your dreams just changing. Like, I think that, you know, we also enjoy an immense amount of privilege. My husband and I, if we're walking down the street, people don't assume that we have, you know, created our child in any way, maybe other than like, so it doesn't invite questions. I think that some other, like, we don't have to answer that. So we enjoy this immense amount of privilege that we get to share on our own timeline, which I think other families don't have that. And so I think that it is really important to me to be open, because I think I want people to know that really, you know, I certainly, when I was struggling with infertility, oh man, I had the worst jealousy seeing pregnant people or families. And I was like, oh, look at that family. And, you know, now I think we walk down the street, we have this beautiful baby and, you know, we just look like maybe we had it really easy. And so I think for me, it's important to be open, because you just don't know, right? You just don't know what people have gone through. And so I think that it's like inviting those conversations and finding ways to, you know, just to incorporate in a really, like, I don't like this word organic, but like just in a very natural way, let's say, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not sharing it with everybody all the time. It. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Isn't it? And yeah, I do think in a heterosexual couple, it is much easier to not say something and not tell the world, but actually then that leaves people feeling more isolated. And actually there are many, many families like ours. Alexa, I have absolutely loved hearing your story. Hayley, have you got any more questions, any more burning questions at the end? I know we could talk for hours.
Yeah, love listening to your story and all the twists and turns. And just thank you so much for sharing. And it's always amazing to speak with another donor conceived person. And we were saying before we came on live, didn't we, is that we refer to it as a dual citizen. So we're
love this phrase. I'm going to take this. Yeah. I'm going to incorporate this. I think this is amazing. Yeah, that would be so great. Yeah.
But no, yeah. I just wanted to say thank you so much for sharing, and all the best for your little family and your little boy. And I hope he continues to go from strength to strength. And yeah, it's just been great to hear from you.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I know a lot of people will have gained a lot of comfort from your story of becoming a mum through egg donation, but also your story of being donor conceived. And even though there was those twists and turns, that reassurance that that relationship with your parents has actually, even though you found out later on in life that it has grown stronger as a result, and that you're very proud to share both of those stories that all form your own story. So thank you so much, Alexa. We really appreciate it. And we will hopefully follow up in a couple of years' time.
Yes. Yep.
I will how you're getting know. On. Fabulous. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
If you're enjoying the podcast conversations, you can find even more as part of the Paths to Parent Hub membership community.
We know that navigating donor conception and alternative paths to parenthood can feel overwhelming, isolating, and let's be honest, a bit scary at times.
And that's exactly why we created Paths to Parent Hub. It's a safe, supportive space for people on donor conception journeys, whether you're at the beginning, trying to decide, going through treatment, or already a parent.
Inside the Hub, you'll find over 90 hours of on-demand expert webinars, honest real-life stories, monthly opportunities to ask questions of our resident psychologists, private support groups, and a community of people who really get it.
We're here to support parents and parents-to-be so they're in the best possible position to support their future children with confidence and openness.
So if you're looking for guidance, connection and compassion, come join us at pathstoparenthub.com.
We'd love to welcome you there.
A huge thank you to TV Edwards for supporting this episode. TV Edwards are a top-ranked, award-winning law firm named in the Times Best Law Firms 2025. Their family law department is ranked among the UK's top 20 and known for their expertise in family law with a compassionate, client-focused approach.
They lead in modern family law, supporting clients through surrogacy, donation and co-parenting. Their solicitors have shaped landmark cases for many diverse families.
And with TV Edwards, families gain more than legal support. They find a trusted partner for their journey ahead.
Becky and I are so grateful to be supported this season by TV Edwards solicitors, and we're thrilled to welcome family law solicitor Anis Mathias to the Path to Parenthood podcast. Throughout this series, Anis will be joining us to answer some of the most common legal questions we hear from our community around donor conception, surrogacy, and modern family building. We are excited to be bringing you those all important lived experience stories, but this time alongside the legal insight, because we know how valuable it is to hear both. So enough from me, let's get into this week's legal question. Now, we've just listened to the lovely Alexa, who is a donor-conceived person over in Canada. Now, for today's question, we really wanted to focus on donor-conceived people's rights here in the UK. So welcoming Anis back. We're going to ask Anis some legal questions, like I say, to do with donor conception here for donor-conceived people. And Anis, I was wondering, if a donor-conceived person wants to find out identifying information of the donor or donors that were used in their conception, at what age are they able to do this? And what is the legal process of obtaining this info if you're in the UK and have been conceived in the UK?
So at the age of 16 years, the donor conceived person can apply for non-identifying information. So they would be able to find out information such as the sex, height, weight, ethnic group, eye colour, hair colour, descriptions of the donor, and they'll know about the year of birth and the country of birth and the marital status. They can find out information such as screening tests and information on the donor's personal and medical history. If the donor has a child, they can find out about the sex of that child, the number of children and the sex of them. And they can find out information such as religion, occupation, interests and skills. And then at the age of 18 years, they'll be able to find out identifying information such as their name, the date of birth and the town and district in which they're born and the last known postal address. One of the issues is that the donor would need to keep the HFEA updated with their personal information, and they may not do so. And so the postal address may be out of date, and the donor conceived person may not be able to contact them. Also, a donor conceived person can give their information to the HFEA, and so that their information can be given to any other donor-conceived siblings. The donor-conceived person would have to apply to the HFEA for information, and the HFEA website says that there's currently an 8-month delay. So it's quite some time.
Yeah, and I know of a few actual adult donor-conceived people now that are covered under, the kind of newish, I would say newish, but it was actually brought in 2005 legislation, which means that any donor-conceived person conceived after that date can, as Anis has explained, go through that application process, and there is a considerable delay, but hopefully, I know the HFEA are working hard to try and improve that. And I just wanted to touch back, Anis, on the information that is given back to the donor conceived person once they turned 18 from the HFEA. And I know you touched on kind of some of that information potentially being out of date, and I do know that
a lot of clinics now are actually obtaining things like email addresses, because we appreciate back many decades ago when donor conceived people that the information would start to be recorded. They just did take postal addresses, but they are starting to introduce things like email addresses and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting to know, I think, for many people that would be listening to this. And I just wanted to clarify, Anest, that information is only available, isn't it, for donor conceived people conceived after 2005, but were conceived in the UK. So if we've got parents here listening, for example, that have maybe gone abroad for treatment, maybe Spain or somewhere else, but even if they're UK residents, that information won't be available for their children, will it?
No, that will very much depend on the rules in the country where the conception took place.
Yeah. And so I think if you're listening to this and you do want to find out more information, if you did have treatment overseas, it's definitely worth going back to the clinic and the country that where you had treatment and where your child was conceived to find out if that country holds any identifying rights for your child. So, yeah.
Thank you, Anest. And I think this is really, really helpful for parents, because often when you're going through treatment, you're not really thinking 16, 18 years ahead, and may not actually know how it works, or you may have to manage those expectations around the delay. And I have heard that as well, that actually there is quite a big backlog with the HFEA. So I think that's also important to understand, so that you can manage the expectations and support your child as they're trying to get that information. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please do take a moment to rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't forget our free resources, including our recent webinar, Why Telling Matters, our friends and family resource, and lots more via our website.
So do come and join us in the Paths to Parenthood membership. We'd love to see you there.
Until next time.